Welcome to The Hobcast, a weekly podcast from Hoback Books, an independent publisher of thrillers, crime, and suspense novels. Each week, we'll take you behind the scenes of what we do, the challenges and the triumphs, the bumps and troughs of building a new creative business in this pandemic world. We'll hear from the people who make all this possible, the authors, cover designers, and editors, and we'll have expert insights from our guest star interviews. Nothing is off the agenda on The Hobcast from Hoback Books, as we combined trad values and an indie spirit.
Hello.
And welcome again to The Hobcast Book Show. It is show number 66. We're rattling through them.
66.
Can't believe it. We're in Route 66 here at the London Book Fair. Welcome again to our final special edition from the London Book Fair. It's been an emotional 3 days. It's been a tough 3 days. It's been a very rewarding 3 days too.
Yes. I describe it as a kaleidoscope of emotions, of colours, of
carpet.
Of carpets. Yeah, pink carpet, red carpet, purple carpet. I've seen blue carpet.
It's been amazing. But we are, I think, at this stage, ready to go home. We have one more interview which we're going to conduct, which will be part of this podcast in just a few moments' time. The man in question is just to our left. But we thought we'd start recording, at least while there's still some hubbub going on at London Book Fair. It is such a contrast to... Oh, by the way, my name is Adrian Hobart.
Oh, yes. And my name is Rebecca Collins.
Together we run Hoback Books, UK independent publishers of the following genres.
Crime.
Mysteries.
Thrillers.
And suspense. And, as I say, it is a lot quieter today than it has been on the previous 2 days.
It's a bit like being in the last hour of a really, really good drunken party.
Yeah, without the drunken bit.
Yeah, so there's empties, but mostly coffee cups as opposed to wine glasses.
It's amazing how many stalls have been swept clear of books and people are, you know, just looking. They've got a 1,000-yard stare of relief.
It's a glassy-eyed look, isn't it, of people. And so at the very beginning, when we first got here, everyone was walking really fast, with purpose, with confidence, head held high. And I noticed this thing that the blokes do, and it's that they lift their arm up swiftly and look at their watch. Well, I should be somewhere important. And
it's
then they carry on walking.
The arm-wrist flick combination so you can get to your watch, which I've just done. And it is, as we record this, 3:28.
And you have a 3:30 meeting, so you better get a wriggle on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've had a number of occasions where that's been the case, and shifting things around. But we've got some great interviews to come for you on this show as we wind up the Hobcast for this year at the London Book Fair. I have to say, last night, I think we were in something of a stupor. We were so tired. We could barely lift our eyes to look at each other across the table.
Over dinner, we didn't really talk to each other.
Well, the food was so awful that it just sort of compounded how tired we were feeling.
We looked like we'd fallen out. We sat there,
just
looking. I was looking over your shoulder, you looking over my shoulder. It did look like we'd had a big round. We hadn't at all. We were just knackered.
Yes, yes, it did exactly how it felt. I thought we looked like, if it was a soap opera, you know, it'd be that thing. If we went into a hug, we both have our eyes open, looking over the other person's shoulder. I mean, that's the nature of... We run the book, the company, together. We're 24 hours, 7 days a week, we're together. Almost apart from the times I go and see my son.
Or are you in the toilet?
Yes, that's my refuge. Yeah, but there's also, you know, you're taking the kids to school, whatever else. But by and large, we're in each other's company for almost the entire time.
Yep.
And when you come somewhere like this where it's just full on the whole time, and even if you try and stand still, it still comes at you at 100 miles an hour.
Even if you shut your eyes, you can still hear it. So there is no refuge at all for the whole time you're here. And I think we'd built up all our need for a refuge to that moment over dinner, and we both sat there.
Yeah,
didn't
we
speak.
Did.
But I quite like that about you. I can sit and not speak to you and it's fine, doesn't mean anything.
Well, I was really humping about it. Anyway, it's been fantastic to meet so many interesting people, and I think, you know, we've just bumped into Danny from Conscious. What's it called? Their company.
Conscious Dreams.
Conscious Dreams. Yes, they were brilliant on the podcast yesterday. We just bumped into them.
But even better than that, we walked past Dempsey.
From Dempsey and Makepeace.
who I wouldn't have recognised, but he's still a good-looking chap, isn't he?
He is. He is. He looks a bit confused, though. He was flicking, you know. But anyway, we have had gathering further interviews for you, and we'll start with another member of the Independent Publishers Guild.
Yes.
And it's a very different genre from anything we could ever consider publishing.
Mm.
This is a company called Vertebrate Publishing. Now, Vertebrate Publishing first became known to me because they've approached me on a number of occasions to narrate some of their mountaineering books about, you know, hazardous trips up the Matterhorn or whatever. And we were keen to speak to them because it's a very niche field. But nonetheless, they've been flourishing for years dealing with that. But during the pandemic, as John Barton, who is the managing director of Vertebrate, told us, things have changed because people want to use the outdoors far more now that they can. And so therefore, they're switching to more lifestyle books.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, also, I was interested in them because they are, they're not based in London. They're another, they're based in Sheffield, aren't they? So sort of a northern publisher.
Yeah, yeah, not far from us. And, you know, it's always good to feel it's not just in London.
Yeah.
But, let's talk to John Barton.
It's been quite refreshing the last couple of years because we've broadened what we do and less protagonists have died at the end of the books.
Unlike our books, which are crime and thrillers.
There wasn't much crime in ours. It was just foolhardy adventure. We did start off, you know, sort of traditionally, you know, publishing narratives about mountaineering epics. And we just found, you know, now we're trying to produce more relatable stories, and you know, we're interested in access to the outdoors for, you know, a broader range of people. And you know, if I'm honest, I'm getting a bit older, and you know, clinging to my ice axes is getting more and more tenuous. So actually, you know, this morning I got up and went for an absolutely fantastic run into, you know, around sort of Hyde Park and Buckingham Palace, and producing books that inspire people to do stuff like that is what we're planning on doing in the next couple of years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Is that partly because the pandemic has woken people up to what was on their doorstep and they were missing when they were locked down?
Pandemic, yeah, I remember that. I think it was what we always wanted to do, and I think the pandemic has brought more people into the countryside, and I actually see that as a good thing. And you know, and if we can provide books that, you know, sort of show people what they can do, where they can go in the countryside, that, you know, that's great.
But in your sphere, I mean, I've got a few friends. I used to work at the BBC in BBC Sport, and quite a number of people like Vassos Alexander are writing books about running. Or you've got, other celebrities bringing out books about the outdoors. Is that something that you're interested in developing, or are you going for the expertise side of things?
I think we try and be authentic, and I'm not saying vast, you know, I got Alistair Humphreys as a friend of Vertebrate's and a good friend, and he did say, am I one of these so-called adventurers that you keep dissing in your blog posts, you know? So, you know, we're looking for authenticity and we're looking for relatable stories. And, you know, Vassos Alexander or, you know, Rick Edwards. I mean, you know, these people can, you know, they can write good books, and I think if it, you know, I personally, I'm not a big fan of Bear Grylls, but he's more of an inspirational character than your average Xbox person. So, you know, I don't see it as a bad thing. I think it's good for publishing. Not necessarily for us, though, that, you know, a celebrity adventure book. I think we're more interested in, you know, people that are out there doing it because that's what they want to do, rather than, you know, what's the next adventure we need to go on that will look good on Instagram.
But yeah. It actually brings people to your book, though, doesn't it? They might first of all come across a celebrity climbing the mountain, but then they look further and...
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I did have somebody come up. We had a stand at a fair once, and we probably had 30 climbing books on the stand, you know, by some of the world's most famous climbers. And somebody came up and said, have you got any climbing books? And I said, yeah, we've got all these. And then they said, you know, like by Bear Grylls. And I was like, he's not a climber.
But where do you stand? I mean, so many shows now seem to be throwing in a sort of wildlife element or an outdoors element. We were watching Gordon Ramsay's new cooking show, which was launched last week, and the first thing they did was some coast deer.
They jumped off a thing.
Well, he jumps out of a helicopter from about 10 feet in his full wetsuit, but then he got all the rest of the characters jump 40 feet off a cliff.
And they're on the programme to prove their chefing skills, not that they can jump off a cliff into the sea.
Does that raise eyebrows that, they're turning it into sort of game showifying the outdoors, or does that bother you in any way?
I think the old me, it probably used to, because I was probably elitist, and now it's like, actually, that looks fun jumping off there. So, if I'm honest, I think, as a publisher, and maybe this is an obtuse answer, our competition is iPads and Xboxes and Netflix. I'm not saying I don't have all of those three things. So if a show is showing people that there is life outdoors and you can do stuff and it's exhilarating, whether it's irrelevant to a cooking show, I don't watch a lot of Gordon Ramsay, so I didn't see it. But I'm fine with it. I think where they're not respectful of the outdoors, but I don't generally see that. I mean, the show I really don't like is I'm a Celebrity. A, it's rubbish. And B, all that eating of wildlife, for entertainment, I just find a bit disgusting.
Yeah. In terms of looking forward to what you've got coming up, what are you proudest of showing off here at London Book Fair in terms of future books and projects you've got coming up?
I think we've got a lot of books coming up. We're doing a book at the moment called Stand-Up Paddleboarding, or the Great Stand-Up Paddleboarding in Great Britain. I don't even know the title, actually. And it's published in a couple of months. That's been really good because the author, Joe Mosley, sort of discovered going outdoors in her sort of 40s and 50s, when she was 50, and it gave her a, I don't want to be condescending, whatever the word is, disrespectful to her, it gave her a new lease of life, it gave her a purpose in her life. She's moved on from being a mother and a wife to being Joe Mosley, the stand-up paddleboarder, and then she did a beautiful film, which is nothing to do with us, called Brave Enough, and if anybody can watch that, it's just amazing. And then she's written this book on how to go, where to go stand-up paddleboarding in the UK. And I think while we've got a lot of books this year, I think that epitomises what we want to do, because it just shows anybody at any age, whoever you are, you can go out into the great outdoors and, have some fun. And it might change your life. It might not. You might just get wet.
John Barton.
But there's no harm in trying, is
there?
No,
absolutely. John Barton, thank you so much for joining us. Now, also on the IPG stand, the Independent Publishers Guild, there's a number of other publishers, but one of them extremely familiar to you.
Yes, so a company run by somebody who I worked with 20 years ago, or just under 20 years ago. So her name is Alison Jones, and she runs her company, Practical Inspiration Books, and publishing, sorry. And so it was a bit of a reunion. We've been friends on social media in all that time, but I haven't seen her for years.
Yeah, and you learn a lot from her, as we find out in this next clip. It was great to meet her. So it feels like the circle's been closed, to be said. She was your boss for a number of years, and so terrific to catch up. And now in the independent publishing field as well, pioneering.
And also another non London based publisher. She's now lives and works in Cheshire, so we are a force to be reckoned with, us non Londoners.
We are. Here's Alison Jones. Alison Jones.
Hello.
This is a reunion. We ought to say this to our audience, Rebecca learned everything she knows about publishing from you.
I did learn quite a lot from you, actually. So I meant to say thank you.
I like the way you dialed that back a bit. We worked together at Oxford University Press.
We did.
A lifetime ago.
Yeah, it was. I think it was my second job in publishing.
It's about 20 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah, and yes, because my oldest is 18. So, yeah, it's 20 years ago.
Man, we're old.
I know.
It was great. Good days, though.
I loved it. I loved every minute of working there. It was brilliant. Great authors, eccentric authors, eccentric people to work with, except for yourself, of course. No, it was really good, wasn't it?
It was fantastic, and it was a brilliant list to be working with. We were working on the non-lexical reference, they called it. The Oxford Companions. And,
food and wine. And
and lots of bonkers authors. It was brilliant.
Railway buildings. That was one of my favourites.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Gordon Biddle.
You gave me a copy of that,
I found a copy for him and gave it to him, because I love that book.
Yeah,
the Oxford Companion series is basically a sort of masterclass in deep niches.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is. But here we are at London Book Fair with a slightly different direction and genre over the last few years. So tell us all about your company and what you get from an event like this.
Okay, so we're speaking on the 7th of April 2022, and this is my 8th birthday.
Congratulations.
As a business. I came to the London Book Fair in 2014 as me rather than as Palgrave Macmillan, and it was a bit of a rude awakening. What do you mean nobody's buying me sandwiches? So we're sitting, and it's a shame you can't see this, but we're sitting in the Practical Inspiration Publishing booth at London Book Fair. I'm surrounded by books that have been published in the last few years. Couldn't get them all on the shelves, and we focus on business books and self-development, which I think is the most interesting non-fiction niche, but I am a bit biased. I think it's a really timely niche as well, because we've got more new business owners than ever before. You know, I mean, I sort of became an entrepreneur kind of by accident 8 years ago, but during the pandemic, like, more businesses were started up than ever.
There's loads of them, aren't there? Ah. Sort of, and also really interesting subjects and areas. Some of them related to the pandemic and sort of coping with having to be at home, or, you know, not being able to engage face-to-face with people. But, yeah. So has that been a bit of a boom for your business?
Absolutely. Yeah. Kind of went both ways. We had a couple of people that were going to be writing books and went, I can no longer write a book because I need to focus on my business survival.
Yeah.
And other people who went, I'm not travelling anymore, I can write my book now.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, it sort of went both ways. But I think books are such an underrated tool for business owners, because most business owners don't have access to formal entrepreneurship education at business school or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, books, they are lightweight, they are cheap. You can get so much information and inspiration out of them.
I was going to ask you, Alison, because you now have a fantastic network of people who have been there, done it.
Mm.
And I suppose anytime you might hit a bump in the road or a little wrinkle, you've got a black book now to die for in terms of finding out a way through it.
It's phenomenal, and it's one of those things. Like, when I took a coaching qualification as well,
part
of the thinking of that was, if it doesn't work out as a coach, at least I'll have learned some really useful stuff about setting up a business.
I've been down that path as well. It's a lot tougher than people imagine.
And it's also a lot more simple than people imagine in some ways as well, isn't it? Because it really is just about holding the space, asking the question, leaning in.
Yes.
And that has really stood me in good stead for working with authors now.
Yeah, I need to use it a bit more. my good lady is the one who does most of that stuff. But you're right. I mean, I've never talked about my coaching.
No. See, I'm sitting here thinking,
tell me more. I'll just step back, you two chat.
Well, no, it was a bit...
Forward the email to you.
I did this through the BBC, so it was definitely directed at getting people to get over themselves. That's the way that the BBC were looking at it, and become more functional again. And actually, I was the one who was falling apart at that point in my life. And, so it was... I found myself doing exactly the wrong thing, which was talking too much. And that's lesson one of the whole thing about being a coach, is to shut up and let people speak. So I wasn't a natural for it, nonetheless. But it must feel fantastic to be at a point today, 8 years on, to look around and this beautiful set of shelves and the books with titles that just come straight at you.
Yeah, they're good-looking books, aren't they?
They're lovely.
Yeah.
Colourful.
And the book, I mean, they say don't judge a book by its cover. What do they know? It's exactly what you do. The cover has to communicate immediately that this book is for you. And that it's accessible, that it's going to give you something of value, that it's intriguing. You know, we spend a lot of time on the covers. So, you know, from 8 years ago, I was typesetting the first book.
Yes, that's still us, yes.
Yeah, proofreading. Everything,
that
cover design, awesome. Now we've got a team. It's I'm allowed to work in my zone of genius.
I'm
working in my zone of, in my narration booth. Yes, my zone of
Don't
genius.
Don't disturb me. I'm in my zone of genius.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, it's Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap.
Uh-huh, okay.
Really good book. And he talks about your zone of genius. And basically, when you're doing something, just have a quick check-in. Is this in my zone of genius? Because if it's not,
you shouldn't be doing it.
You shouldn't be doing it. You know, delegate. Find someone else whose zone of genius it is and let them do it. And you crack on with what you're good at.
It must be brilliant, though. From the point where, you know, obviously you were in a senior position when you worked with Rebecca, but to have that autonomy. To, of course you're working with people, and of course the authors want their input, and that's part of the brilliance of being an independent publishing company, in that you can offer that level of direct contact with the authors, and they feel that. That's why they come to companies like us and you.
Yeah.
But how liberating is it to be in this position?
not a leading
the
question
smile
at all.
Says it all.
No. Sorry, I felt, you know,
You're absolutely right, and that the autonomy is wonderful and terrifying.
Yeah.
Because when you're an entrepreneur, you know, in a sense, there's no ceiling, there's no constraint on what you can do. There's also no floor.
No, that's true.
To stop your fall. So that, you know, it kind of depends on how you're feeling in the moment as to whether that's a cool thing.
And that can vary day by day and in the day as well, can't
by
it?
By the minute, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful. What I love, I remember when I was Director of Digital Innovation Strategy at Palgrave Macmillan, my sort of last corporate job. I used to get all these sort of startups coming to me and asking, you know, would you be interested in it? And of course, it was very hard to sell any kind of participation or experimentation through all the governance hoops of a big organization.
Yes, yeah.
And quite rightly, because, you know, actually, there's not much benefit, you know, potentially. But now you can just take a punt. You know, you can work with a startup, and you can say, well, let's absolutely put our books into this new experimental audio ebook sort of, you know, combo thing. And we just do it, and that's brilliant. And the reason we can do it is that we've really, really put the back into the systems and the processes that enable that. Because then you just flick a switch and you've got a feed, and you can, you know, if you haven't, having the plumbing in place sets you free.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much stuff you can do when you know where everything is.
Yeah, that's true.
It's something we're improving, but that's very clear to us. You know, we're marking our second anniversary effectively by being here, because the last time we came,
book fair, it was just us two. Did we have a logo then?
No, we didn't have a logo.
And now you've got mics and everything.
Yeah. That's just how far we've come. Everyone's jealous about the mic
and a mug
boxes.
We have a mug, but we didn't bring on mugs.
But you know, it's that feeling of it's all very well, you can get your first authors in, which we've done, and it's been brilliant, but getting it so that it's grooved and that it's a smooth, because when we started out doing the typesetting for ourselves, got our first copy of Vellum and started producing books, it was all fresh, wasn't it?
I was terrified. I remember, you know, we were coming up to publication day, I was thinking, I've got to put this up on like all these systems, and I've got to work out, you know, get the metadata right for everything. I was thinking, I've never had to do this before. Oh, ISBNs, where do they come from? You know, it was like, going from 0 to 100 very quickly in a matter of a week, I think it was.
It did feel like that.
But now it's like, okay, yeah, do that, yeah, do that, yeah, do that.
There's another step change we can make, which is to just sort of say, right, get on with it for someone else to do it.
And that's it. As long as it's in your head, that's no help, because you know what you're doing, but you're going to be stuck doing it forever unless you can operationalise that.
Yeah, that's our next job. Well, you know, I knew this interview would bring us some because I wanted to say, I mean, this is no word of a lie. I mean, there is a regular conversation that Rebecca and I have, and she will quote you and say, Alison always told me this. Or, you know, and particularly when she says, now, I know you've looked at the back blurb of that cover, but could you look at it for the sixth time, please?
Yeah.
Because something's going to be wrong. And that was something apparent.
It was both you and Pam drummed that into me.
Yeah.
Check, check, check again, and then check again.
Absolutely.
And then get someone random to check, because that's good too.
And Pam Coote taught us everything we knew, basically, doesn't
she? Oh, she's brilliant.
She's amazing.
So in a sense, I'm sort of feeling this sort of, the circle has been closed now today in this conversation, because, you know, you wouldn't know it, but you've been very influential on the development of Hoback.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, well, that feels very
special. Because I
started
that job, I didn't know very much at all, really. But, yeah.
And so in terms of taking the business forward, where do you see things going? I mean, we've survived the pandemic. It's actually been beneficial.
I don't know if we have survived the pandemic. I think this is going to be a super spreader event itself.
Yeah, we're all
expecting a weekend in bed.
Yeah. And the rest.
Yeah, so more books. I don't want to grow the list much more than this. I think 35 books a year is my kind of ceiling for really knowing each book and being involved with each author, which is really, really important to me. So it's you know, carrying on sort of more of the same and building on the stuff that we're doing, but we could do better.
Yeah.
So the bookshop sales, for example, you know, I've spent a lot of time schmoozing with booksellers here today. Yeah. We're running more events. We're smartening up our marketing because we're promoting our authors as much as our books, and they've got platforms as well. And it's international. We've had a lot of rights conversations today.
Wonderful.
Also been talking to instructional designers about, you know, course development. So
yeah, I was gonna say,
it's just building out, you know, taking that intellectual property and really making the most of it.
Making the most of the intellectual property.
And other platforms, I presume, you know, becoming a bigger feature now. I mean, the audiobooks are in an obvious sort of adjunct, but
More audio. Yeah, it's getting much more cost effective. We're also going to be experimenting with digital audio.
AI generated audio.
I don't think that would ever work for your leprechaun erotica or whatever deep niche you happen to be thinking
about. The audience are aware of it, yes.
And actually, for instructional books, it might work. Okay, I don't know. We're going to try
it.
It's pretty good.
I think it is that thing, though, that you know, with fiction, what you're selling as a narrator is the emotion.
Yes.
And that's what you've got to
connect
with.
But can you put emotion in pensions?
I tried. I really tried. I got very excited about SIPs.
I think a lot of people get very emotional about pensions. Especially if they haven't got one.
Yeah, exactly. It's fast approaching. But look, Alison, it's been an absolute pleasure to see you and finally meet you, in my case, and to reunite Rebecca and yourself, you know, one of your protégés. Has gone forth and multiplied, but you know.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I have three children.
I have nothing to do with that. Just to be really clear.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Fair enough. That's took that analogy too far. But anyway, 21 authors and 45 books later. Yeah. Yeah. Your wisdom has come through the generations.
Yeah. My work here is done. I'm
absolutely. No.
I've never happy. Done.
Well, and we wish you no COVID and a quick recovery from what is...
And a lovely, quiet weekend.
A manic event.
Yeah, it's been fun, and I'm ready to go.
But I think that's a good state to be, isn't it? Fun, but ready to go home.
Yeah, I think it speaks for all of us. When we started thinking about setting up Hoback Books, it's a few years ago now, not that many, I started listening, certainly the kernel of the idea of setting up Hoback Books, in my mind, or at least going into this independent publishing sphere, was through podcasts, principally. Joanna Penn's podcast, she was around here this week. And also, potentially our next guest after this one, Mark Dawson's self-publishing formula, was another important influence on the decision to do what we've done. But equally, the fantastic bestseller experiment podcast presented by Mark Stay, where he and a colleague tried to create and publish a book, best-selling book within 50 weeks, was another big influence. You know, this feeling that you can do this. And it's a good, fun podcast as well. It's up to 400 episodes now.
That's incredible, isn't it? We're on 66 and they've done 400.
And he is a very established and polished writer. He's written some... principally a screenwriter before writing novels now, but he also worked in he was a gamekeeper, so to speak, in publishing, mainstream publishing at Orion and places like that, as he explains. But now he is a full-time author and book mentor and keeps the podcast going. And it was great to speak to
and
him.
And a jolly nice chap too. I've never met him before. And I want to be his friend.
he's a tremendous guy. So let's speak to Mark Stay. Well, we're absolutely thrilled to be joined by Mark Stay. This is a bit of a fanboy moment for me because I'm a massive fan of the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I have to say, without the bestseller experiment, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now, which is running a publishing company.
We're happy to take full blame. Running a publishing company?
Yes,
crikey.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, partly the fact is that we got together and Rebecca was in publishing and I needed something outside the BBC. So
that's
and I said, why don't we do it ourselves? Give it a go.
Yeah.
Why the hell not? Fantastic. So that's so good to hear.
Well, thank you. So the last time we were here, when it was last held, we were at Ingenues walking around going...
Yes.
Without even a logo. But now here we are with 21 authors and 45 books and la la la. But
and two microphones.
Congratulations. They've got, listeners, they've got really great mics, proper mics. The kit you've got is far superior to anything we've got on our podcast. So I'm in awe.
Podcast envy.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what that is, but I want one of those.
Well, you can travel through time with that.
It does look like it. You hit 88 miles an hour, you're going to see some serious stuff. Yeah, yeah.
It's something else, isn't it? Yeah, that's new to the inventory. But... it's great to speak to you. So you have you're one of the sort of flag bearers for this indie revolution. And is that fair?
I'm not sure it is. You've got, you know, the Mark Dawsons and people like that, you know, who were the real pioneers, I think. I came to it quite late. I try not to see too much. I'm not one of these people that say it has to be indie and it has to be trad and never the twain will meet. I think the future is hybrid. I think you're seeing a lot more traditionally published authors getting the rights back to their book and finding organisations that can help them market them or reinvent them or republish them, or they might just, you know, decide to do it themselves. And that is, you know, I mean, we started the podcast in what, you know, 2017,
yeah,
I think.
I've
completely lost track of time. You know, and so much has changed even then. So we were all about trying to inspire writers. The self-publishing thing was there. But we said to people, I think the best thing we ever did on the podcast was say to people, look, beat us to it. If you've got a half-written novel in a drawer, whatever, wherever you want to do it, indie, trad, whatever way you want to go, beat us to it. And the great joy is so many of our listeners have, and yourselves, you know, you've done, that's astonishing, setting up your own publisher. That's next level stuff. But, you know, we've seen authors published by Gollancz and HQ and Avon and you know, some and they've gone on to win awards and write trilogies, and it's just been wonderful. And it's the reason we kept the podcast going, because really our remit was only for 1 year to self-publish a novel in a year and see if we can get up a few charts. But just to keep that ball rolling, and just the privilege of talking to authors every week. And you soon discover there are, as Millie said in the panel we just did, Millie Johnson said, there are no rules, you know, apart from maybe write something and finish it. There are no rules. You know, you'll find your own way of doing this. There is no single path. You've just got to keep banging your head against the keyboard until some words come out.
Absolutely. Mm. And you can do both at the same time. You can traditionally publish one book, write another one and publish it yourself. And
yeah. I mean, my first novel was traditionally published, Back to Reality. Mm. We self-published. The End of Magic was Unbound, which was crowdfunding.
Yeah, it's another way, yeah.
You know, and now I've got 5 books for Simon & Schuster in various stages of release and, you know, drafts and what have you. So I will definitely go back to the self-publishing space at some point and the hybrid thing. It's the opportunities are there, and you now look at a project and you start thinking, okay, where could this live? Would this do better with the publisher? Would I be better off doing it myself? It comes down sometimes down to genre, who the readers are they international, are they just for the UK, or are they just, you know, there's a million decisions to make, and none of us really know what we're doing. But, you know, we flounder our way through. But as long as we all keep writing, I think, you know, that's what makes me happy. Though, you know, that first writing session of the day gets me off and gets me going.
I mean to ask that the energy you must get back from listeners and the stories that must inspire.
Even
those dark days when you're struggling at the keyboard.
Yeah, it makes me tingle. You know, we've someone was here yesterday, Ivan Wainwright, the author Ivan Wainwright. He won the Selfies.
Wow.
And Ivan's been a Patreon supporter for 3 years. He's, you know, we're constantly talking to him on social media, cheering him on, saying, you know, if we were there when he was doing the 200 word a day challenge,
wow.
And saying, and now he's won an award at the London Book Fair.
I know. I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it?
It's astonishing. Yeah. So everything that happens like that just lifts us. And it's why we keep coming back for more.
Tell us about the series then with Simon & Schuster. I was just flicking through and looking, because, you know, I'm sort of catching up with your career up to date now.
Well, it's called The Witches of Woodville.
Yeah.
And it's about a young girl. It's set in a fictional village in Kent, North Kent, in 1940, home front. I always pitch it as the last 10 minutes of Bedknobs and Broomsticks meets Dad's Army with a bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And she's a young witch who discovers her mother's passed away, but she discovers a book of magic that her mother left her, and there are two other witches in the village. And as the series goes on, they confront supernatural threats. As well as the war going on and rationing and everything else that's going on, there are things in the deep, dark wood. And I'm the third one. So we've got The Crow Folk is the first one. Babes in the Wood came out last summer. The third one, The Ghost of Ivy Barn, comes out in July. And I'm currently working on the first draft of number four, which is, and I love it. It's my happy place. It's it's where I return to again and again. And it's Simon and Schuster have been absolutely brilliant. So supportive, so enthusiastic, and I hope they'll let me keep writing them for as long as possible. And the thing is, if they don't, I can still do it.
There are other options.
You know,
yeah,
I can. I already write short stories that I give away in my newsletter. So if you want to know some, you know, and I'm now dropping hints in the stories about those short stories. So hopefully, will people go and seek out more. And so yeah, that's what I, you know. It's been such a great opportunity, and it was when I sat with my agent and said, let's go traditional with this, because I'd like to see it in bookshops. You know, I'd like to come to things like this and you know, talk about it and sell it internationally and stuff like that. So yeah, that's been a joy to write.
Over the years, then, coming to this event, do you feel more comfortable as you go along as the years pass? Or because we feel a little overwhelmed coming to an event like this.
Well, this is the first. Is it the first time I've come here and I've not worked for a publisher? Because I worked for Headline, I used to work for Orion Publishing, and so I'd use the Hachette stand as my base.
Yeah,
you know, leave your bag there.
It gives you that sort of confidence, doesn't it, having that base?
Yeah, and you got free tea and coffee at the back and Kit Kats and stuff. That's now forbidden to me. I can't go in there. But I'm here as an author, and actually I'm all kind of goosey-loosey. I'm kind of enjoying
You're
it.
You're a nomad.
Yeah, and it is intimidating, I think, because there's just so much. You walk through, this is two big halls. You know, you walk in and go, whoa, where do I start? I think if you're an author, start at Author HQ.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a full roster of stuff from morning till night with the best authors, indie trad and everything in between, giving you terrific advice. You're meeting your peers.
Exactly.
Here as well.
I think that's the most important thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're meeting people who might be just starting out, finish a draft, maybe on their first book or whatever, looking for that same, and you'll make friends here, you'll make contacts, and you know, you'll see each other, you know, rise up. So it's definitely worth spending a day here. I'm not sure I'd want to spend much more than that, to be honest. And you know, this is a place of business. I know, because letting authors in is a relatively new thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is where your editors and agents are selling books. They're really, really busy. They don't necessarily want you doorstopping them and going, oi, about that 99p promotion a few months ago. You know, they haven't got time for that. They've got business to do. But, you know, it's great to see it thriving. It's just nice to see people again, isn't it?
It's wonderful, yeah.
It's me. You're right, it is. We found that. I mean, the barriers have gone up when we went to try again to the Reich's bit.
Right, oh, don't go there. Oh, don't go there. You don't want to do that.
No, that was a little naive.
Well, they wouldn't let us in. Name wasn't on the list.
Absolutely not.
Name's not Dan, you're not coming in.
And
clear off.
In terms of your ambitions in the, you know, next couple of years, what are you planning? Finishing that series clearly, but what else is
I don't want to finish the series. I want it to go on and on. I've got a film coming out in October, which is fun, a horror movie called Unwelcome, which is coming from Warner Brothers. So that's in the can. It's all done. We've just been waiting for, we were supposed to bring it out in March, COVID, Omicron, everyone got a bit jittery, so they've moved it to Halloween, which for a horror movie I think is great. So I'm working with my co-writer and director on the next one. We've just got the first bit of funding through for that, so there might be another film. We're pitching TV shows as well, so it's nice to balance that, you know, writing for film and TV is very collaborative. You're very much in service of the project. You do as you're told, in other words. Whereas when I'm writing the novels, like I said, it's my happy place. That's for me. That's my thing. So it's great to have a balance of those two things.
Fantastic.
You're going to be very busy.
Well, you know, it's either that or I sit around eating chocolate hobnobs all day.
Do both at the same time.
No, I can't. I really can't. I'm on a calorie-controlled diet at the moment. It's gone too far.
It's probably a good job you can't have the Kit Kats then.
Exactly. It's very good. Very good.
Too Mark Stay, it's been an honour and a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Same here. Same here, Adrian.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you. And to finish the week off, I think we have the guest that we've always wanted to get on the show. The man who I credit with giving me the idea.
The rugby tackle worked, didn't it?
Yeah.
Lee Child wasn't available, so.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Peter James turned us down politely, but no. Mark Dawson, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
Thanks for asking. And I do give you credit for planting the seed that led to us setting up a company. And so we thank you for that, because I started listening to the self-publishing formula when it was SPF.
Right. It was, yeah.
Some years ago, and now we are a fully fledged company, but it really couldn't have happened without people like yourself pioneering the industry.
Yeah, no, it's nice we hear that quite often these days. People, you know, either started, someone like Jasper Joffe was a early, yes. He took one of our courses early on, and now is, you know, Jasper's obviously a very clever guy and has done really, really well, but you know, he would admit that in the early days he got quite a lot out of our community, which is lovely to hear, because someone like him is helping dozens of authors now make their livings as a writer, which is wonderful.
Yeah, and in fact, it was that interview with Jasper way back in, I think it was your show 82 or something like that, that made all the difference.
Yeah.
That was the point where we thought, let's use your publishing knowledge.
Yeah, my knowledge and your...
I don't know what I have, but I bring to the party.
Ravishing good looks.
yes, at one point. but here we are. Last time we shook hands was actually here, the last time the book show was held.
Yeah.
And does it surprise you? Because I've mentioned this a couple of times on our shows this week, that Author HQ and the sort of indie community are still parked in a corner.
No, it doesn't really surprise me, because if you think about, as I just actually said to someone on the stand who asked me a similar question, I think it's got to the stage now where the traditional industry can't really ignore the fact that there is another way to publish. But at the same time, we are in some ways a threat to that model. So they kind of have to have us as a presence here, but perhaps not a presence that is as obvious as some of the others in the main hall, and also, of course, the guys in the main hall are paying quite a lot of money to be yes. in those positions, whereas, you know, I don't know how much it costs to be up here, but I imagine it's a little bit less. So, yeah, it's not a surprise, but, you know, it's one of those things that's worth finding. You get the authors will find us eventually, and I think, you know, it's been pretty good. I've only been here today this year, but it's been pretty good enthusiasm and a lot of people asking good questions, so...
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's interesting, because we were talking to Rachel McLean about the sort of questions she was being asked, and she felt that there was a gulf between the path that you and she have taken in terms of figuring out what the audience want and writing to that. Whereas a lot of people coming up to the desk are
with their dreams.
They have the book in them and they want it to be presented in the way they want it presented, as opposed to what the audience are expecting.
I think there is something that we are all guilty of, and kind of unconsciously, is that we're in an echo chamber, right? So what we think everyone knows what we know about publishing, and it's easy for us to think that what we know is really common knowledge. But I've been doing this long enough now, and I've been speaking at LBF for maybe 6 or 7 years now, and other conferences, and it is definitely true that most people don't know what's possible. So I've had questions today about how do I format a book, and yes. you know, where can I find an editor? What do I need to do the cover? What's the difference between KDP and Amazon? You know, these are questions that are so rudimentary and fundamental, that because, you know, and we know the answers because we live this. Whereas most people who would like to write a book have no idea that they don't need anybody else to reach readers. I think that's exciting. You know, it's, you know, for us SPF as educators, it's a lot of people that we can still reach, and for you guys as publishers, that's a lot of people who you might be interested in publishing with you, rather than taking what might be considered a less attractive deal with somebody else.
Yeah, with the traditional industry down there, and I say down there because they
are down there.
They are down there. Yeah, looming large, but down there, it's. Interesting. I mean, obviously, you have two main courses that you offer. The 101 course is really for those people who are coming up to your desk and don't yep. know how to format. At least the early sections of that course explain all of that, and building an author platform and a website. And then you're getting into the the stuff that actually shifts books.
Yeah.
But that is a hard thing. And I said, I know that you revise the Ads for Authors course that we have every year, but it's moving so fast. For instance, yeah. Facebook, the changes with Apple devices suddenly being blocked to them because people are opting out their data, and suddenly the ads platform has changed completely.
Yeah, it's one of those things. We decided early on that we would, number one, we wouldn't offer like a yearly license. So it's, you buy once, it's yours. Number two, we decided that we wouldn't charge for additional content within that course. So things like, we've added things like the TikTok course. Which, I mean, that was, that cost, well, not say how much, but that was a, that cost us a good five figures.
Wow.
Very good five figures to put that together. And we could very easily have charged for that, but we took the decision that we would include that in a rolling kind of way for everyone. And number three was we would, as best as we would try and make sure it was always up to date. So that does involve usually young Tom going through the courses and making sure that what we show in the course is reflected in what authors see on their dashboards.
Yes.
And in those cases where it doesn't match up and we feel it's too far away from what they actually see, or it would be a more difficult for them if we didn't change it, we will re-record things. And obviously that's time consuming and expensive, but on the other hand, our courses have a pretty good reputation. I think those reasons are partly why that's true, because people know that we are going to look after them. It isn't just a give us your money and then we're going to forget about you. We want to make sure that they recommend us to everybody else, and also just because it's the right thing to do. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But the interesting thing, I mean, TikTok obviously is something that you've put up there this year and had a big, last few months have been a big sort of push where people joining in and sort of sharing their discoveries on TikTok. But there is a feeling that perhaps with Facebook becoming more of a blunt instrument, it's no longer the scalpel because of the fewer options you've got to sort of target accurately your audience.
I think that's overblown, actually.
Did you think?
I do.
I think
people have panicked about that without really thinking about it enough to whether that panic is warranted. So what Facebook has done is it's made it a little bit more difficult to reach some people, but it hasn't really affected the platform itself. If you imagine Facebook as a walled garden, things you do on Facebook, Facebook still owns that information.
Sure.
And you can still use that information to target. What it has made things a bit more difficult is things like retargeting. So if you have someone visit, you click on a Facebook ad, go to a website on an Apple device, Facebook might not be able to use that information or use it.
Yes.
Give you the option to use that as a targeting option. So that's definitely had an effect. And things like easier unsubscription from newsletters and things like that, and kind of anonymized email addresses, stuff like that kind of have a useful impact when it comes to privacy, have certainly made it more challenging to use Facebook ads, but people abandoning Facebook as an ads platform are making it easier for those who don't see it quite the same
way. That's actually a really good point, isn't it? Yeah.
Where would you say your the emphasis in terms of platforms that you're using to market the books?
I got that question today as well. I mean, it varies from month to month. At the moment, it's probably 70-30 in favour of Amazon. But next month, depending on what my aim might be, it could switch to something else. So, you know, we use Facebook as all kinds of things. I mean, to sell books, to sell courses, the self-publishing show, we're advertising tickets.
Of course, in June.
So there's lots of different purposes you can put it to, and also it depends on genre as well. So I mean, you know, my ads, it can be a struggle for me these days, but then I've had about, I don't know, guessing here, I've probably spent £1 million on Facebook ads over the last 6 or 7 years. It'd be in that area. So I've had hundreds of millions of impressions, so people in my genres are in my genre, they know my ads. You take someone in a genre like, you know, kind of a subgenre of romance who's just getting started with 3 or 4 books, that can be a real money pit. Well, not a money pit, it could be a real kind of money generating ATM.
Right.
Even today, and it was definitely more so 10 years ago, but we still see lots and lots of authors doing really well with Facebook ads.
Yeah. Is there a need for, I mean, do you anticipate there'll be another platform that's going to come along? I mean, TikTok's obviously appealing to a certain generation of readers and building sales there?
I think TikTok actually, to my, I mean, I was skeptical about TikTok.
Yeah.
I still, because I'm just super busy, I don't have time myself. And I also, I'm slightly skeptical that there might not be an audience for, as big an audience for me as on TikTok as compared to other platforms. But saying that, James, co-host on the self-publishing show, is using TikTok really well with his one book.
Yes.
And he's got videos with over 1 million views now. And
yeah.
I mean, he writes military fiction, so obviously given...
It's Cold War plane enthusiasts.
Yeah, and given the current climate, he's leaning into, in a respectful way, things that we're seeing with unusual aircraft flying over parts of Europe that you wouldn't normally see. And you know, he's definitely generating interest for his books. And as he said on the show, I mean, he's making a profit with one book, which is hard to do. He's making a profit and also building his audience, which is his main aim.
Absolutely. And in terms of your writing with John Milton and the other series that you're writing, all of the other things that you're involved in, do they get in the way of the writing, or is that still sacrosanct?
Yeah, the writing is the most important thing. So, I mean, if I had to choose, then I'm sorry, SPF gets the bullet immediately. But luckily, these days, you know, the writing side is just me. Right? So the business is really just me. There isn't really anybody else. On the SPF side, we probably have 10 people working on that around the world with, you know, one permanent member of staff, young Tom, me, James and John, and then maybe 7 or 8... contractors or VAs or support staff. Catherine is increasingly important to the business. There's lots of people who are able to help, and you know, things like the podcast, I just have to turn up, talk for 10 minutes and then clear off again, and James does the interviews, but then the actual production is all handled by other people now. So
you have to stay in your zone of genius. This is a phrase we learned this morning, didn't we? So anything that is not in your zone of genius, other people can do.
I think we've done it all before. I mean, in the early days, we did everything, but it's not efficient. As you get to a stage where we're able to find people who know what they're doing in those zones of genius. So, you know, we've got a really good video editor who does the YouTube show and edits the podcast at the same time. We can do that, and we have done, but I'd rather James spent his time doing something that was more valuable. And we're happy to pay for someone to do a good job, and that's what they do. So, yeah, it is a question of just being a bit smart on that.
And I have to ask, how's the building going? Because I've been watching on Instagram the plans, and then steel's going in and whatever.
Yeah, we've converted a barn next to our house, and that's pretty much done. I think in a couple of weeks' time, I should be in there.
Wow.
Hopefully.
That's another milestone. I mean, it's been a remarkable journey over the last few years.
Absolutely,
do you pinch yourself still that this has all happened, or do you put it down to the zone of genius? I mean,
I think it is important to remind you, for me anyway, to remind myself that this is kind of my dream job, you know. And I certainly the writing side has always been something that I always wanted to do, even as a young child. And to do that now and to be paid really well for doing something that I love is, I know that's really lucky. Then on the other hand, you know, I didn't know that I'd enjoy teaching as much as I do, and doing things like this. I used to hate public speaking, used to be terrified of it, but I quite like it now. And so it's great to be able to have two businesses that I really enjoy. I'm very fortunate. So I do have to remind myself to be grateful for everything that we're together.
Before we finish, then, remind us where people can find you online, but also about the the SPS live event, and when that is and where it is this year.
So markjdawson.com for my books, selfpublishingformula.com for SPF. The self-publishing show is in the South Bank Centre on the banks of the Thames in June. I think it's the 27th or 28th.
Yeah.
It might be the 20th or 29th, but I think it's the
27th or 28th. I think it's the early dates, yeah.
Yeah, and tickets are available. We don't think we'll sell out this year for the same reason that LBF is not that busy, because I think people are still a little bit nervous about COVID, and I think they're also a little bit nervous about world events and things like that. So we think there'll be space, but we'll have about 500 to 600 authors there, I think, and sponsored by Amazon. Loads of... You know, three speakers will have been at number one in the US store. And you know, Rachel, who we've mentioned, is giving did a webinar for us that was really great. She's going to do something similar to that, which will be really worth going to as well. So we're looking forward to it.
Mark, thanks so much for your time and bringing our LBF podcast to a close. Thank
Pleasure.
You.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Wonderful speaking to Mark Dawson from the Self-Publishing Show and the author of the John Milton series, Atticus Priest, and a number of other best-selling series, and one of the great pioneers of indie publishing.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it was great to speak to him. So we are delighted to have that opportunity. And as I say, I think in terms of the development of Hoback, the creation of Hoback, it wouldn't have happened without the influence of those podcasts and indeed those courses.
Absolutely. She said again.
Absolutely. Right. Before we go...
You can tell I'm tired.
Yeah, you're very tired. Before we go, we'd like to remind you that we not only produce ebooks, or indeed printed books, but also audiobooks.
We do.
Enter a world of great stories from Hoback Audiobooks, from authors including Mark Whiteman, Linda Huber, Malcolm Hollingdrake, Essie Shepherd, Ollie Jarvis, A.B. Morgan, and Robert Dawes.
Tamara Sullivan once more gave up on the book in her hand. She leaned back in her seat, closed her eyes, and prayed that the 2.5-hour flight would bring less turbulence than the last few months of her life had managed to generate.
Lottie's hands fought their way back to his hair. With a yank, she almost removed an entire clump.
Stop the bloody car now, DC Bradshaw. That's an order.
I squeeze the steering wheel to stop my hands shaking and lean forward to give myself the clearest view of the road. Last week I was looking forward to a holiday. Last week I had a future.
She dreaded the answer to her next question. But why me? You must be aware that I haven't accepted any work for 3 years. You'd never request someone who'd been out of the game for so long, unless... She stopped. Unless I had some special skill.
Daria leaned over to kiss Evie's damp little forehead, then jerked back in horror as a long, deep horn blared and headlights from an approaching lorry swept through the cab. A single, sickening scream left Daria's soul as Evie's rucksack scratched across her face.
Betancourt waved a languid hand. Later, he pulled away the cover. Working like a camera, his detective's eyes took in everything. The woman was young, probably early 20s. Prissy.
Hoback Audiobooks. We know the power of great storytelling.
We do?
Well, it said we do, so we do.
Okay.
Let's just roll with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's time to draw a close to London Book Fair 2022.
You know, this happens to me whenever I go to anything, on holiday or anything like this. I feel a little bit sad at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can't say I do.
No, you don't.
No, I mean, I found that this has been a very challenging trip. Rewarding, but challenging. And I haven't... the main reason I've struggled, I mean, it's partly mental, because I really struggle in busy environments like this. And the introvert within both of us has been a stumbling block in terms of, you know, there's a lot of hovering to be done and then cold introductions.
Yeah.
And I'm not a natural at that sort of thing.
No, normally, not even remotely.
No, so that's tough. But physically, on my feet, I haven't really been out and about and, you know, I wasn't match fit for this.
No.
And, you know, we've done 12, 13, 14,000 steps a day carrying luggage most of the day.
Yeah. It's physically and mentally demanding.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I won't lie to you, my legs have blown up like melons.
They have, I can vouch for that.
You know, there have been times when I could only... My mother, who's 88, and uses a Zimmer frame, gets around quicker than I could this week.
Yes, I wouldn't like to put you and her in a race right now.
No, I would be...
Well, I know where my money would be.
Yeah, I'd be a distant second. She's fiercely determined at 88 with a Zimmer frame. But all that aside, it's a place where you learn a lot. you learn about yourself, but you also learn where you sit in the publishing firmament, where you can go in the publishing firmament, and what we can do. And we hope that the people we've spoken to have shone a light on different aspects of publishing, but ultimately, it's all been about the love of books.
That's why we're here. We love reading, we love books. That's what draws people here. And there are people here from all over the world. And yeah. Every aspect of the industry. You know, you look at their name, their lanyards, and there's translators, editors, authors, publishers, salespeople, rights people, all sorts.
Yeah, it's been extraordinary. And it is, it's quite overwhelming to think that this is only a fraction of the industry worldwide that could actually make it here this year.
Yeah, that's true.
And the scale of it. But we feel that we're as valid a part of it as any other of the people exhibiting here. And next year, we hope to be a stronger presence.
I would like to have a chair next year.
I think so.
And a bowl of sweets.
That too. But it's, we've learnt a lot. And we shall use that knowledge and the new contacts we've made to take Hoback Books to a new level, our authors to different places. And hopefully, we will have grown in knowledge and confidence from this whole experience.
That goes without saying. Like I've said to you before, you know, whatever happens, you're not going to lose out. You're always going to gain, whatever it is.
Yeah, even if it's
sweets.
A bunion or two.
Oh, I've got bunions. That's something to do with walking.
Fair enough.
Genetic.
Absolutely. Sorry, we have to leave it on bunions. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us in these special editions of the podcast. We will be taking a little break this weekend from our regular show, but we will be back again a week on Monday. So,
and you're going to ask me who we're interviewing.
No, I'm not going to ask.
I actually cannot remember.
No, genuinely, I have no idea either, but I'm sure it'll be fabulous.
But then you ask me who the Prime Minister is right now, I would go, I don't know, some bloke.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 chance it'd be a bloke. You're quite right. We won't go there into any further political discussion. But anyway, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to bring these programmes to you, the three special editions of the Hobcast. And if you've enjoyed these, and there'll be plenty more fantastic interviews to come. We've got some promises from a number of wonderful guests.
Yes, that's true, actually. So we've got some guests in the pipeline for
today. We do indeed. But we're with you every week on the Hobcast Book Show. And we will be back, as I say, in about 10 days' time from where we are sending this podcast back from the London Book Fair at Olympia. We're going to make our way back to the Hoback Cat, who is probably desperate to see us.
Oh, gosh. What she normally does is whenever I've been away, she will sleep next to me for about 48 hours without moving.
Yeah. So you've got that to look forward to. And we've got to look forward to our return to Hoback Towers. But from myself, Adrian Hobart.
And me, Rebecca Collins.
We'd like to thank you for joining us on the Hobcast Book Show. Please don't forget to look at our website, www.hobeck.net. And also subscribe to the podcast if you so wish, which would be a great support to us. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been emotional. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Hobcast from Hoback Books with Adrian Hobart and Rebecca Collins. You can find the show notes at our website, www.hobeck.net. You can also use the exclusive Hobcast discount code for any of the products at our Hoback online store. Just enter the code HOBCAST20 for a 20% discount. Don't forget to subscribe to the Hobcast and feel free to contact us with any feedback. Until next time, remember our motto, Trad Values, Indie Spirit.